G'day, expats. Welcome to another episode of Expat Chat, episode 25. Today I'm joined with a special guest, Jeremy Harper, who is the director of Atlas Mortgages. How are you going, Jeremy?
Good, thanks, James. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well, mate. I'm on the Gold Coast and we're getting absolutely smashed with about probably 6 months worth of rain over the next few days. So there's been some flash flooding. I know it's similar down in New South Wales at all, but from what I understand, it's going to be a bit of an interesting week, to be honest. I think a lot of road closures, a lot of creeks overflowing. So we'll wait and see. But I know that's happening down in sort of Penrith way as well. Have you been impacted by it at all?
Just very, very wet. So going to the city and it's been putting through all the pipes and the drainage through its paces in the last week. Lots of rain.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, to our fellow listeners, Jeremy's also just had a recent bub as well, so that's probably keeping him up late at night. I'm looking at him right now. He probably might need another coffee soon. How are you holding up with the new family addition?
Yeah, it's been interesting. No, you can't prepare for it, that's for sure. So lots of coffee.
Yeah, I bet. Obviously, probably too early for a full night's sleep. I imagine it very sleepless at the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, we'll excuse you later, throughout this episode in the event you get baby brain, so that's all good. But I suppose before we jump into it, a bit of a disclaimer. Today's episode, anything that's being said or comes up on the screen, it should be only treated as general advice only or for entertainment purposes only. Do not construe anything that you hear today as personal advice. Definitely reach out and seek personal advice from a professional in the industry. But kicking into it, Jeremy, you've been looking after expats for a while now, as when it comes to their mortgage side. So, Jeremy, tell me how you actually transitioned into being a mortgage broker. I know previously you were a part of the accounting world.
So originally from Melbourne, and then when I graduated university, worked in tax and private client wealth, so looking after their tax and planning needs. So did that for a number of years and then got my CA and then went and worked in the industry, so looked after internal reporting for a retail outlet. And then my friend got me onto mortgage broking many years ago and said, look, have a look at this industry. You get to work through numbers, but also help out everyday clients with their financial needs. And that really just drew me into it. So that was about 5 or 6 years ago. And then spent a couple of years in New York as an expat myself,
Oh, great.
which was great fun. And then 2019 moved to Sydney. So I'm north of the border. I guess I'm another expat again out of Melbourne. And yeah, just been working in Sydney now, still doing mortgages, but also focusing on expats specifically.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about sort of that pathway when you've sort of gone from accounting world, taxation, then into mortgage broking, being self-employed and then being an expat, I mean, it's a wonderful value add for the conversations you're going to have with expats just because you actually understand everything they're going through. Even when it comes to applying for a mortgage itself, you've been through it yourself. So do you ever find yourself leaning on your CA anymore, your chartered accountancy? Do you ever have conversations with your own clients about tax or anything like that, structuring?
Yeah, I mean, always I have general conversations, of course. I say I can't give you specific tax
That's
advice,
good.
but
No, that's good. That's good.
always speak to them about, okay, what could be the tax implications you need to chat to your accountant about, because people always think ownership of the property, which is where your tax issues fall out from, is the same as the lending landscape, but that can be quite often very different. So going through the different options, particularly when you're talking with people who are looking to buy a property who maybe they've got a partner who's a non-resident and they're overseas, what are the tax implications around that and how do you structure that for their specific needs? So yeah, quite often always going through the tax, because that's always part of the conversation, not just the lending and getting the best rate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a terrific value add, the fact that you are a CA, because I don't know any actually mortgage brokerages where they have a tax background and they can have those conversations. They already have a firm understanding of property, CGT, and then the lending requirements around that. Because you've been a mortgage broker for a little while now, are there sort of main areas that you see expats fall over? I mean, I know with some of my own clients, they're always sort of conditioned to just use their current bank that most of their accounts are with when it comes to getting a mortgage, but it's also the bank where they might not be able to get a mortgage from, unfortunately. Do you ever find any key themes or issues like that? You know, I suppose expats just being shut out by the big four or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess two things. One is often I'll speak to someone and maybe they've just gone back to their bank that they've always used, who they banked with when they were in Australia, might have been 5 or 10 years ago, or they might have gone back to a broker that they always used locally back when they first started their property journey. And sometimes just knowing their, understanding their unique situation, that there might be options available, but the going back to the original bank might say no. And just because they've said no doesn't mean that there are not options available.
Yeah.
And then I guess the other thing to think about is, particularly with clients in the US, just around getting their application ready. So that I always find there's having that conversation around that pre-application. It's like getting yourself fit in the gym before you need to rely on that. And, you know, when you're in the US, you're conditioned. And when I was there, it was always about, could I have more credit? So more credit cards, bigger lines of credit, bigger credit limits. Yep. That's good for your credit score. That actually works negatively for your application in Australia. So, you know, making sure that having that conversation around, do you need to reduce some of those limits to ensure that we can actually get to the loan in Australia? Because sometimes people need to do a few things before we even put the application in.
Yeah, absolutely. The credit score is a big one. And I think a lot of people forget about the process of the credit score and how it works with a lot of the big banks, especially if it's just a case that you make a little inquiry about, you know, this is my income, this is my asset level, this is what I'm looking. You submit that online and that links to sometimes your credit score, especially if it's considered a hard inquiry. You know, even though you haven't actually technically done anything, you do enough of those over a few years, it actually negatively impacts your credit score. So if you're someone that is maybe always sitting on the fence about a property purchase, but you make all these inquiries each year because you just maybe get stunned, analysis paralysis about pulling the trigger on it, doing that constantly, it has a negative impact on your credit score. Is that right?
Yes, yes. So the way I try and work is sit down, get the information of the client, and then give them three options, not just on the rate, but three options that they can qualify for. Mm-hmm. So understanding their circumstances and say, okay, you can qualify with this lender, and then going through those different options as opposed to make it an application for each individually, because that's three hits of the credit file versus just discussing who they could qualify for without having a hit on their credit file.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. Okay, so that way they're not formally, I suppose, committed and it's not going to negatively impact their credit score.
Correct.
I mean, with credit scores, over a few years, they wind back a little bit, you know, obviously improve the less inquiries you make as well. They obviously over time improve based on your, you know, your past.
Yeah, so now, so in, I think it was 1 July 2017, Australia went down comprehensive credit reporting. Mm-hmm. So it's a similar model to the US. And so if you run your credit, pull up your credit in Australia now, you'll get 2 years history and it'll have each month it will get reported by each financial institution on how you, what was your conduct on that specific credit card, mortgage, car loan, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so that will be there for 2 years. So if you think, oh, my conduct for the last 6 months been great, and then we run your credit and there's a 6 month period on a credit card that you were constantly 2 and 3 months behind, that is now reported to the entity. So it's just a matter of, I think, sitting down, running your credit as well before, if that could be an issue for you, running that credit to understand, is there going to be some issues that we need to tick off before we put an application in?
Yeah, okay. I mean, and I suppose when you're going through the process with, you know, a new expat client, does the brokers or the loan providers that you use, do they take into account the specific jurisdiction they're in, or is it a case where, you know, these lenders, it's mainly a case where even if you're in, say, a tax-free environment, you know, the Middle East, you know, you're on a great wicket, say 200,000 Australian equivalent, do they still assess that as you being all 200,000 tax-free, or do they assess it like you're paid here in Australia? How does that operate?
So that will depend on the lender's credit policy. Some will still apply Australian tax rates against the gross income.
Yep.
So obviously your net borrowing position with those lenders is going to be significantly less.
Yeah.
And some will still accept that net of income for servicing purposes.
Yeah, okay. No, that makes sense. I suppose you know, the amount of years that you've done mortgages for, has there ever been a case where you've just been absolutely shocked by the interest rates that were on some of your previous, I suppose, clients or anyone that you've refinanced for? Have you ever been shocked by the interest rate they were previously on?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So it's I've had clients where you can save a good 2.5% interest, which is for some lenders, for some products now, it's double what the interest rate is.
Yeah.
So huge saving.
Yeah.
You know, on that, on the refinance, I think there's a couple of things to note. First point, you know, if you're on a variable loan, call up your bank first.
Yep.
See what that, what sort of deal that can get you. That's always going to be the first point of call. And then secondly, when you're thinking about refinancing, there's a couple of things to think about. There's obviously with the existing lender, there's a discharge fee. There'll be a mortgage retitle fee from the state that the property sits in. And then depending on the new lender, there'll be potentially a new application fee to cover off valuation legal fees.
Yeah.
So roughly, I always say those three items, you know, you'd be in for about $900. So
yeah.
If you've got a small lot and you're purely just trying to reduce your interest rate, speak to your bank first.
Yeah.
See what they can do. If not, then you can look at refinancing, but making sure that we can get you back that $900 cost to change lenders. So there are lenders, depending on the time of year, there's always lenders that will offer what you call refinance cashback, $2,000, $3,000. Quite often I'll see those promotions. So I always think that will cover off that $900 switching cost.
Yep.
And then if there's a if this benefit, well then fantastic.
Yep. Yeah, okay. I mean, with, I suppose, expat mortgages, is there any, or have you come across any jurisdictions where, I mean, I imagine with your aggregator, you've got access to thousands of different loans, but is there any locations around the world where they just won't touch, whether it's maybe a DFAT 5 country or one of those high-risk countries? Have you ever come across that? Is there any countries where it's just a bit iffy?
Yeah, look, some lenders will default back to sort of what the government's anti-money laundering and what their risk profile is. Then it comes down to verification. You know, there's some countries where you can't get bank statements out of the system to verify income, so you can't really do anything. You know, not every country has the reporting like it does in Australia, where we've got nice clean bank statements presented in a nice readable format. Some lenders, some banks overseas, you know, it's very hard to get the information out that they need. So it has to be translated, has to be, you know, stamped by the correct translation company that's recognised in Australia. If you can't get those, then the banks will just won't take that loan on.
Yeah, okay. Yep. And I mean, with, I suppose, what we've seen in the last, I would say, 12, 13 months, I mean, in Queensland especially, the property market's just gone crazy here. It's slipped into a bit of an aggressive bull. I mean, do you know, or not do you know, do you think we're going to see a bit of a fiscal cliff after the March quarter with all the rollback of the stimulus packages? Do you think we might see an interest rate increase in the next 12 months?
Well, following the governor, Governor Lowe, his comments have been, you know, they're not going to move the interest rates for the next 3 years. So I'd be sort of guided by what he's saying. In terms of this bull market that we're in, it's been driven by owner-occupied. And so if you look at the borrowing capacity of owner-occupied borrowers in Australia specifically, and if you compare their borrowing capacity to, say, 18 months ago, most have had a 20% increase in their capacity to service a loan.
Yeah.
So that's where this growth's come from the owner-occupied segment. If you look at the last booms, that was driven by investor borrowings, which is when APRA stepped in and said, okay, now this is getting interest-only lending is going to be out of hand, whereas this is more driven by people trying to get in and get their own property. So that's why I think you'll keep seeing strong demand on the owner-occupied side.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know just in Queensland alone, you know, the stock turnover, it's been huge, but you're right, it's sort of been a case where we've noticed this this mass migration coming up from Melbourne, Victoria, and then obviously Sydney, New South Wales, where that kind of money is coming up this way. And, you know, people are selling their owner-occupier or their main residence, which might be, say, a two-bed, one-bath townhouse that's worth $1.3 million down there. But when they're coming up here, they're able to afford at the same price a house that's on the water in, you know, Burleigh Waters or Mermaid Waters or whatever. So it's interesting to see that sort of shift and transition, which means that, yes, we're probably going to see Southeast Queensland, Northern New South Wales just have this big lift now, but I just can't see it lasting too long. I think after probably the March quarter, it'll take another probably 12 months to see it all slow down again, because obviously all that stimulus package isn't going to be there anymore. Have you seen any updates recently from any of the banks which might be a subtle indicator that we will see interest rates climb in 12 to 18 months? Has there been anything like that out of any of the majors?
For the first 2 months, all the banks came out and started to cut their rates. So what I'm finding is the variable rates are sort of a bit more higher correlation indicator of, is that bank specifically wanting to get new business in the door? So they use that more of a lever. They'll cut maybe a 2 or 3 year fixed loan available to the market. And so we saw really aggressive, you know, from the big four, all through the lenders, really aggressive on the fixed pricing to 2, 3, and 4 year, which typically you normally see 2 and 3 year, but the 4 year being really discounted. And then only today CBA came out and they've reduced their 2 and 3 year fixed loans again. So they've actually increased their 4 year fixed loan, which is quite interesting. It was sitting at 199.
Yeah.
And they, for own occupied, and they add an extra 20 points on. So maybe they're signaling that the 4 year cost of funding is going to be a little bit higher than that 2 and 3 year borrowers.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, I think I remember coming across an ANZ. It was like a 7 year fixed loan, and I think it was something astronomical. I think the interest rate was like 8 or 9% for that period. But then you look at the 5 year, and the 5 year was like, you know, 2.5%. So it's interesting to see that sort of difference. I don't know who's locking in a 7 year fixed rate at that price, but maybe they've got it that high just in case. It's interesting to see that. Yeah, when you look at just the big four as an example, like you just said, you know, they give that discount the variable, but then they take it away from the fixed. And maybe it's because they want more people writing variable loans, because that way if the interest rates do go up quickly, well, they can easily pass that over to you. And right, that's where they'll make up the margins. So that's, it's a very interesting takeaway. I mean, generally, when you're going through the process of writing a new mortgage for an expat, is there a time frame that you try and sort of stick to, or is there a time frame generally? I know a lot does fall on the expat, getting organised, getting the paperwork, those sort of things. But with the lenders that you use, you know, what sort of general time frames when it comes to, you know, getting a loan?
So, I mean, there's a few things. There's obviously purchase and a refinance is sort of classified differently in terms of timeline. If you're trying to purchase property, you're under contract, the bank can turn that around pretty quickly. You know, a week or two, you can get it formally approved. A refinance is going to take longer purely because the banks, well, some banks will treat that a little bit slower than a purchase, which has got a finance date due, and you have to settle on a date. And then the other thing is you have to wait on the outgoing lender to discharge your existing mortgage. So that can, depending on the lender, that might be an extra 5 or 10 days on the process.
Yeah.
The other thing to think about as an expat is, what state you're trying to buy into, and how will the lender get the loan docs to you. So most lenders now are offering emailed loan documents, so you can print them on your existing side, or even some will allow digitally signed from your tablet overseas, but then you've got the mortgage. So it depends on where you're buying. So for Victoria, you know, you can just have someone, I think they just change it so you don't need it to be witnessed, or it just has to be someone over 18.
Yep.
Whereas if you're buying Queensland security, you might need to find someone who's a qualified witness. So you might need to go to the consulate or get an Australian lawyer to witness the mortgage.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, do you often find when you're writing new mortgages, a lot of time, obviously, things need to be certified to Australian standards? You know, they actually have to go to a local embassy, depending on the country they're in, those sort of considerations?
Yeah, I mean, again, it depends on the lender's requirement.
Yeah.
Number one, a lot of lenders now with COVID, they changed a lot of their identification process. So as a broker, I can do a video call to verify their ID. Whereas previously COVID, they said, no, I have to go and take their ID to a consulate. So that's good. That's been a great change for expats. Mm. And then there's obviously the land office requirement, depending on where you're buying and where the security is located.
Yeah, it's interesting how COVID, you know, COVID-19, it's something we're going to talk about for the rest of our lives, but how it's obviously made us all adapt to our processes, especially, you know, the banks. I know a lot of lawyers, you know, they can witness a will being signed in front of them via a Zoom camera. So it's interesting how, you know, things can be certified in that manner. And that was like a big thing that was came out probably through the periods of, I'd say, February through to sort of June, July, where a lot of elderly were unfortunately passing away and lawyers scrambling to make sure they had updated wills and those sort of things because they're compromised immune systems. So very interesting to see technology adapt with that. Let's hope it just keeps getting better. I wonder if they'll ever sort of use, you know, the blockchain technology so things can all just be all digital. You know, one day that'll come around, but I'm not going to go into cryptocurrency. It's too hard to understand. It's just it's too volatile.
Yeah, it's definitely been a great positive step for our industry, because I know prior to COVID I had banks saying no, you can't do it. They had the technology, but they just didn't want to implement it into their process. But now that nearly everyone's on board, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And one other thing I was going to raise was, isn't there some news about responsible lending rules changing as well? I don't know whether that's actually been enacted, but I believe it was talking in Parliament only last month about whether they're going to make some changes to it. Are you able to tell me a little bit more about that?
So that was getting passed through to essentially put the responsibility more back on the borrower.
Yeah.
And so, that, you know, if borrower goes to a bank and says they need a loan and they've, maybe on the application they've told the bank, I don't have any children, yep, and they've got children, in 5 years' time they can't turn around to that bank and say, look, you didn't pick up, I didn't have children. That would fall, that responsibility is going to fall back on the borrower, because it's up to themselves to certify, you know, yep, is the information correct?
Yeah,
so okay. I think it's putting, because out of the Royal Commission, I think what you found, and clearly listening to the Liberal government, is they felt that the responsibility is put back on the banks, which slowed down processing times, took a lot longer for them to approve loans,
yep,
because the banks were trying to verify everything because of the risk. So it's, yep, really putting that back on the borrower. But in terms of myself as a broker, from January this year, there was new legislation that came through on 1 Jan called Best Interest Duty.
Yep.
And so what that means is, as a broker, legally we have to operate in the best interest of the borrower. So if we recommend a loan that's, you know, 1% higher than what that client could qualify for, we're not acting in their best interest.
Yeah.
So obviously that means that when we're providing advice, we have to think about obviously the overall needs and objectives of that borrower, mm-hmm, and making sure we're acting in their best interest, not in just getting them a loan.
Yeah, no, that's terrific. I mean, in our industry, we obviously, we have our best interest duty already. And I mean, by applying that to obviously mortgage brokers, you're obviously going to ideally have less churning happen after sort of the 1 or 2 year mark, when, you know, there's no clawbacks or anything like that from a revenue point of view. So that makes sense. With the serviceability and I suppose the responsible lending rules, does it mean that a lot of banks will just take, I suppose, borrowers' word for what they can afford, what, you know, they'll base it on their assets, but also, oh no, I can afford to pay $2,500 per month as my mortgage repayment? Is that what it's essentially saying? You know, we will take your word for what you think you can service.
Well, no, I don't sit in directly in a bank, so I don't know how they verify themselves.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
they would still be verifying pay credits against pay slips against what's in their bank statements. So that's, mm-hmm, a very basic, but I think a lot of that verification might be around things like living expenses.
Yep.
So if you came to me and your last month's living expenses, the last couple of months, you're spending, you know, $3,000 a month for the general living outside of the mortgage, and you said, look, once the loan's drawn down, my living expense will be $2,500,
mm-hmm,
that's the responsible lending saying, okay, well, that's what you've said, you can get to $2,500.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So still passing that risk over to the borrower, saying, listen, this is what you've told us. We know this, but we're taking your word for it. You know, obviously there's the other, I suppose, calculations they build into how much that you can afford and all those sort of things. But it'd be interesting, right, to see how that, yeah, goes.
So they still have an assessment rate, so they'll buffer in the repayments. If you're trying to get, you know, a loan at 2.5%, they will still assess those repayments at 4.5%, 5% to put in some conservability there.
Yeah, great. Okay, perfect. Well, I mean, Jeremy, thanks so much for joining us today. I mean, you've given us a really good summary, especially what are the different items that expats need to be aware of. as mentioned, Jeremy is heading up, I suppose, Atlas Mortgages. So we expect to have him on a lot of more expat chats, and we can grill him. So send in any questions that you might have, so that way we can throw them in, because obviously we do these for you. In the meantime, Brett and I will be doing another episode soon, just to dovetail on from our last episode about lifetime health cover loading with private health insurance. But in the meantime, people, stay well. Jeremy, thanks for joining me today.
No problem. Thanks, James.
Thanks, mate. Speak soon. Cheers. Bye.
Yeah.